No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We had a guest scheduled for tonight, but he had to cancel at the last minute, and we didn't have time to replace him. So we're just going to have to wing it. But there's a lot to talk about, so we should have an interesting show. And we want to hear from you. So call in or Skype us and let us know how you feel about what's going on. There's so much going on in the world. But before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who got to shovel snow today, which I assume is a treat for her because she doesn't get to do that kind of stuff in Arizona. Are you there, Kathleen? Uh-oh.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are, Kath. Oh,
have you lost like me? I'm here.
Comment. You did okay for somebody from the Southwest.
Well, I did really good. What are you talking about? That was ice underneath that snow. And, yeah, I can see how people have heart attacks. Isn't that one of the biggest issues that happened? Because I didn't think... But by the, I think after 45 minutes, I was drenched in sweat. It was a good workout. I think I even figured out it's like the amount of time that I shoveled was like 1,076 calories I burned. So, you know, there's something good at the end of the rainbow, right?
Right. So you have to
but
have
it's
some
cold.
Yeah, it's cold. And when it gets wet and cold. Heavy, you know, we didn't have a lot of snow, but we had... You know, 6 or 7 inches when it gets wet or heavy, it's tough.
That's a lot of snow. I don't care. I don't know. Maybe you think it's not, but I thought it was a lot. And I tell you, people in Arizona don't have any reason to complain about anything. Let me tell you, this is the best time to be there. The weather's perfect. So it's been interesting. You know, I know the older you get, I can feel a little bit my hands, you know, got that arthritis. So it's definitely an adjustment to be back on the East Coast during winter, but I'm hanging in there.
Well, and you had those great tools to work with. That made all the difference. Yes. The plastic shovel.
The plastic shovel with a broken handle. That was very helpful, by the way. As typical, you give your Mexican help, you know. They don't give them the tools to really do their job. What can I say?
Hey, you know what they say. It's a poor workman that blames his tools. but anyway, you did a good job. And... It's been a busy week, huh? Busy week here in Washington for us.
Yes, it has. Very, very busy. And very productive.
Yes, it has been. Let me first say, on the statehood front on Capitol Hill, we have 207 co-sponsors in the House. I'm sorry, I say 207. We actually have 107 co-sponsors in the House. That was a typo in the script. All Democrats, of course. No new ones. Since last week on H.R. 317, the New Columbia Admission Act. Again, all Democrats. Come on, there's got to be a Republican out there. There's got to be one Republican out there that believes in democracy, believes in freedom, believes in justice. Stand up for those principles and support our legislation to make the District of Columbia a the 51st state. It just can't be all Democrats. But speaking of Democrats, they were in town this week, and we spent a lot of time with them, didn't we, Kathleen?
Yeah, we did. It was actually great to see, you know, we're both old DN staffers from back in the day. And it was really good to see that there were quite a few people that were still involved in the process and had risen from staffers to be members of the DNC and also on the different committees. So it was. And it was very productive. And I think there was a big plus for or triumph, right, for you guys.
Well, yes, and let me just say on a personal note, the surprising thing is that after 35 years, they've all gotten old and crotchety looking, and you and I still look pretty much exactly the same as we did. I just don't get it. I don't know what they've been doing.
They've not been drinking the Kool-Aid, I guess.
Yeah, I guess not. And just before we go any further, let me say that, you know, today's a great day to be an American because 35 years ago today, a handful of guys in Lace Placid, New York, where they thought they didn't have a chance, came up against the Soviet Union in a hockey game and made history. I mean, a handful of guys whose names we remember, but who nobody knew in those days, and they really showed what you can do.
That was an incredible time.
It was incredible. And how many of us watched it on TV? I mean, we were all riveted to that game. That's right. And, yes. And, you know, it just shows what you can do when you pull together and you work together as a team and you don't try to stand there as an individual and do things, but you work together as a team. It was maybe for me, and I love a lot of sports. I like to watch a lot of sports. I don't play a lot of sports. But, you know, it was one of the greatest team victories I've ever seen. It was just an amazing, amazing victory.
They were such the underdog, and they came. You know, they looked scrappy, and yet, you know, that was like so what America was about. And it's hopefully still is, you know, the scrappy underdog who just works really hard and has hope and faith and wins at the end of the day.
Well, you know, we were a country of believers in those days, and I hope we're still, like you say, I hope we're still a country of believers. I don't know sometimes whether that's true, but, you know, they certainly prove that the team is more important than the individual. And I think we saw that this week as we worked as a team with activists and other people involved in D.C. government to get some resolutions passed and to do a bunch of things at the DNC winter meeting. But before we go any further, well, we'll talk about this in a minute. Let's talk about the winter meeting at the Democrats that the Democrats had here in Washington this week. We got a resolution passed by working together in support of statehood, putting statehood back in the Democratic platform, and most importantly for me, getting official recognition for our congressional delegation. And let's explain that. We're of course officially recognized in the District of Columbia, but we've never been, to my knowledge, ever included in resolutions and other things like this that come before the national party. Kathleen, at a meeting of a group of people that set this up, brought this up. And it kind of astounded me, to be honest with you, because I just hadn't thought about it. But it really, really is important. And she brought this up at a meeting. She got everybody to agree that it was a good thing to include our delegation as part of the resolution so that people understood that we are elected officials who work hard for this cause. And after a lot of inside political maneuvering and by me, by Kathleen, by activists, by other people involved, we got the first resolution passed that recognized our delegation, among other things, at a national level. So thank you for that.
No, you're welcome.
I think my salary to you.
half of you, and you, the raise you're going to split with me too, right? That brings you to about what, zero?
Yeah.
I guess I want the audience to understand, and my reason for bringing it up was that, you know, when you were up for re-election in 2012, you received 207,000 votes. Paul Strauss, the other senator, just in November received 189,000 or 198,000, more than the mayor and any of the councilmen. I think maybe the council, maybe combined, got less than that. You know, maybe the mayor and all the people who ran for council. 189,000 is a lot of votes. And then for the representative was Franklin Garcia, and he got about 100,000.
Yeah.
So
and
my
Paul
question,
actually got about 159, but that's still a lot more than the mayor got.
That's right. So I think what I can never understand when I listen to the activists and when I listen to, you know, kind of been involved in the past couple years, more so than usual, is that nobody talks about the voters. Those are, you know, that's kind of like where it all begins and where it ends. It's what the voter wants. And you can't, I think sometimes they try to say, well, you know, they don't know what they're voting for. And I find that such an insult to the intelligence of the residents of D.C. because I think the voters absolutely know what they're voting for. In fact, when voters don't know what it is, they don't vote for it. Just like, a lot of people didn't know there was that second seat, at-large second seat, and what was it, 72,000 people didn't vote for it? So
yeah,
I think it
came in second. It came in second.
Right.
You know, the top two people are supposed to win, but it came in right behind the person that came in first. No votes, came in a close second, a really close second.
So, you know, to sit there and not give homage or not give recognition to what those voters want and what they're voting for seems to be a basic, you know, mishap that's been in the activists, because that really is, without their votes, you wouldn't exist. So it's the bottom line to why you're there. I mean, that they are the reason you're there, and they should be given the utmost respect for voting.
Well, I think something really important that you said a week or so ago was that when 207,000 people vote for you and you don't recognize, you don't give, and we're talking about locally, politically, the political leaders don't give us the right recognition and respect, then it's really saying to the voters, your vote doesn't count. And how can we fight to get a vote nationally if we're saying to our voters locally, we don't care that you elect these people, we don't support them? So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad, and it was nice to see that. I think that, you know, sometimes when you're so involved in something, you might miss the just real simple steps. And so I think it was a really good thing that they did recognize that the voters vote in anticipation and vote for a delegation to be presented to Congress when we do become a state.
That's right. And also, and equally as important, maybe even more important, is that we got the Democratic platform in the resolution. We got a demand to put the statehood back in the Democratic platform. And for those of you that don't know, first of all, this is important because it's an endorsement by the Democratic Party nationally that we should have equal rights in the District of Columbia. And it was in the platform for many, many years, but it was taken out a few conventions ago. And the wording was changed to include things like budget autonomy and legal autonomy and a vote in the House and representation and other things. But the word statehood was taken out. And we fought very, very hard at the last convention in 2012 to get the word statehood put back into the platform. And at the last minute, we realized that it wasn't going to happen. So what I did was, for the convention, I took a lot of money out of my pocket and I begged the representative at the time, Mike Panetta, to give me a few thousand dollars on top of all the money I could scrape up. And he did, and we put up two giant billboards in Charlotte. One was across the street from the convention center, and one was on the main drag. And basically they said they were famous pictures, Washington crossing the Delaware, and the billboard said, "Stand up for democracy," I think it said, "Stand up for our democracy, support D.C. statehood," because it had Washington stand up in a boat. And the other one was the one that was across the street from the convention center said, "To form a more perfect union," which of course is the beginning of the preamble to the Constitution. And I say with great pride that Bill Clinton, President Clinton, said in his speech that the objective of America was to form a more perfect union. So my personal opinion is he was probably looking for a great catchphrase, and as he walked into the convention center, he looked up and saw our billboard and said, "That's it, to form a more perfect union." So so anyway, we did that because it's important to have this in the platform. And so it's important to make sure that this is the official position, and it ought to be the official position of both parties. But again, and I wish there was a Republican out there listening who could call in and explain any of this to me. But in the Republican platform last time, they actually had a prohibition against D.C. statehood. They actually said they wanted, as part of their platform, to make sure that the people of the District of Columbia continued to be held down and treated like second-class citizens. And I don't understand how people that have that kind of attitude can be trusted to run the world's greatest democracy. So if you're a Republican and you're out there and you hear this, call in and let me know why you think your party stands against us. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And excuse me, one thing I do want to add is that if you remember the woman from Alaska who said she remembered as a kid being told that it would never happen in her lifetime to see Alaska state. And I've heard that a lot from people who are not involved in local politics, just on the national level, but live in D.C., to even activists say, well, you know, not in my, it's not going to be in our lifetime, but, or I'll have somebody say, well, it's not going to be, yeah, that's not going to ever happen. So, you know, when I heard her say those words, it was like, wow, you know, it's like those rumors that hit, you know, they exist in just the basic idea, you know, people want to be the haters, or what is it, the naysayers, or tell you it can't happen. But I'm sure to African-Americans, they thought that it would never happen in their lifetime. And I remember my grandparents thinking to have a Catholic as president would never, ever happen in their lifetime. So that just doesn't seem a viable excuse on why you don't demand it now and work for it now.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. How many things have we seen? Not only Obama becoming president, and I'm sure, you know, I heard in 2004 and 2008 at the convention that we wouldn't see an African-American elected president, you know, the end to apartheid. Or, you know, look at how many things we've seen change in our lifetime. When I was a small boy, there was still segregation on the buses and black and white drinking fountains and you know, all that sort of stuff. So I don't think you know when it's going to change until it changes. And until you make it change.
That's when you make it change.
That's absolutely true. And you know what? Dr. King said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I would add to that the rate at which it bends, the rate at which it bends towards justice depends on how many brave people are willing to stand up and temper it, are willing to take the time and the effort to make that change, to make it bend. But we see it bending towards justice in our case, I think, and it's just a matter of time, and who knows when that time will be. Unfortunately, the mayor of the District of Columbia said this week, earlier this week, that she didn't see it happening in this Congress. And you know what? That's absolutely true. It's not going to happen in this Congress, but that doesn't mean we should back off. You know, imagine the civil rights, Dr. King and the leaders of the civil rights movement backing off when Lyndon Johnson, who was a renowned segregationist in Congress, became president. They didn't back off. In fact, they made the greatest strides that were made during the civil rights movement under Johnson, the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. So it's no time to back off. This is the time to gear up.
I mean, it's anything. I'm sure that I remember in the 1980s, you know, how many of my gay friends never thought there would be, right, you know, civil unions or a marriage or whatever it is for them. But, you know, that's come their way too. And so, you know, you just can't let the excuses buy you, you know, time and let you sit there and become lethargic. You know, you really do have to get up, and just every day you're going to push for it. And I think that that's what really is crucial to D.C. is you got to get your mayor and your council to feeling that way too, because from the outside looking in, and I mean the outside is just coming back to D.C. for a while, you know, they are not for statehood. And again, I say this is my own opinion. They need to get on the train or get on the platform, because if they don't watch it, they're going to be seen as the ones who are the biggest blocking stones to the movement, and that would be a very sad thing for them.
Well, they are, and you know what? But I'm not sure that that's not always the case. I mean, I'm sure that when I think about it, the city council of Montgomery, Alabama, probably wasn't behind the bus boycott. I don't know that for a fact, that there was nobody on the city council that was for it, but I'm assuming that's true. I think that people in government and people in politics and elected office have a tendency to go for the status quo. They don't want to make, they don't want to make problems. So they just do what is easiest to do, take the path of least resistance, worry about themselves and not the greater good sometimes. You know, I keep on going back to something that Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton said to me, and that was that nothing is generated inside the walls of the Capitol. It all comes from outside. And I think that's true in City Hall, too. It's not nothing's generated from inside the walls of City Hall. We need to make it happen, and we need to put pressure on them, and we need to get people together to move. And it's a shame that you have to fight the city council as well as the Congress, but I think that's exactly what we have to do. And let me tell you,
I think you're going to have to. I'm sorry. I just think that also every city council person that gets elected, statehood should be, the people who vote for him should make sure that statehood is something he's going to fight for and not stand in the way of.
Well, and that's it. Once enough people make that demand, then they'll be on your side, you know? We laughed about it the other day when we got the resolution passed and said, you know, success has many mothers, right? So once people start demanding this, they'll all be acting like they've been for it all the time, you know, all the time. And they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. But, you know, also this week at the meeting, we had several other good things happen. One thing is we got several other resolutions supported through the different caucuses, the Black Caucus and the Ethnic Caucus and the LGBT Caucus and the Eastern Caucus. And there was one other that I can't remember.
Women's caucus.
Oh, my God. How could
it was actually the Ethnic Council. The Ethnic Council is the one adopted, not the Eastern Caucus. So you need a woman, need women around. Because
Eastern women, did too, didn't they?
They did? I thought it was the Ethnic Council.
Yeah, I think you were too focused on the Women's Council. You know, woman, hear me roar, that you forgot.
Exactly.
Some of the other But you know, and thank God. And you know what? I think that it says a lot. The people that are supporting this, because certainly African Americans know how precious the vote is, because they were denied the vote. Certainly women understand how important the vote is, because they were denied the vote.
And they still don't have the ERA amendment, so they better wake up.
They still don't have the ERA. That's right.
Women should wake up. Although someone told me the other day, a gentleman that I worked for, he says, well, you don't really need it. I'm like, really? Yeah, you need it. You definitely need it to be put in the Constitution. And then I was just kind of thinking, why hasn't it? And I had been doing some research. You know, the big issue I remember at that time was like, ooh, you're going to have like, you know, co-ed bathrooms now are going to be required everywhere. Look where we are today. I mean, so many things they were worried about if they pass the ERA is old hat now. But I still think it's a much needed thing. And as I was talking to one woman involved in the issue, you know, I mean, I love activists. I've been an activist in schools, in all kinds of different domains. And there's one thing we all have to admit. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy, because I think that the feminists have made it now. They've become career feminists. It's a career to be a feminist and keep on fighting for this ERA that just no one really hears about. And I don't see women pushing. I see them definitely trying to get women to run for different seats, but they should be passing the ERA amendment, get it done, and let's move on to the next thing.
Well, yeah, I think absolutely we need it in the Constitution as well. And women still don't make – look, if you think that women are equal, you're just wrong. And when I say equal, I mean institutionally equal. They don't make as much money as men. They don't they're not in the professions as much as men. They don't get the same benefits that men do. You know that even in professions like medicine, they tend more to be pediatricians and dermatologists and people that don't make the highest salaries in medicine. They tend to be in the lower ranks. And the same thing in law. Now, law is changing a lot. But, you know, the biggest lobbyist in D.C., the people making the most money as lawyers in the District of Columbia are men. They're not women.
Yeah.
So they don't
driving a lot of Teslas around town, by the way.
There have been a lot of Teslas around.
Never
there are always
so
guys
many.
Behind the wheel, right? We don't see any women in those $100,000 cars. So there's still a long way for women to go to reach equal status. They've covered a tremendous distance in my lifetime, but there's still a long way to go. And as the father of two daughters, this is an important issue to me, and I think you're right. I think that we need the Equal Rights Amendment, an amendment to the Constitution that recognizes women as equal citizens, and it will open doors for them that have been closed for years. Some have been open, but some still remain closed. And so I think it's an important issue. And hopefully we'll have Carolyn on at some point, who's the lady that has introduced and reintroduced the Equal Rights Amendment over the years, to talk about that. Let's also say that back to the DNC winter meeting, that we got a lot of other things done besides getting the resolutions passed.
Well, there was Tell everyone what happened to you. Where were you when the president came and spoke?
Well, I will. I actually got to talk to the president, so that was a good thing. That was another positive thing that I went to the general meeting. And was in the first row listening to the president, who gave a great speech. And it was you know, really heartfelt, and I think he made some good points. He said, you know, he loves to sit there and hear the Republicans trying to redefine themselves as the party of the working class and the party of the middle class when they do all this stuff against the middle class, against the working class. We're now, for example, he pointed out, making more jobs, creating more jobs than have been created since the last time there was a Democrat in the White House. You know, they always tell you how important jobs are, but then they don't do anything to create new jobs. So, you know, he gave a great speech. And after the speech, he took some time, because we were all Democrats there, to stop and talk to people. And one of the people he got to talk to was me. And when he came to me, I said to him, I identified myself, and I commended him on his remarks, and I said to him, God bless you, Mr. President, for standing up for D.C. statehood. We really, really appreciate your support. And his response to me was, of course, it's the right thing to do. And so I think it's good that we have the president on our side, and he stood up for statehood in the past. And I think it's great that he continues to stand up for it. And it was, you know, always nice to talk to him. Every time we've talked to him, he's supported statehood. He told me at another meeting at American University that he would sign statehood legislation. If we could put it on his desk, we get it on his desk, no problem. He would sign it. And, of course, last year when he was asked the question by a high school student, he said, I'm for it. I'm for D.C. statehood. So that was a very positive thing. We also, Kathleen and I, talked to many members. The chairman of the Alaska Democratic Party was just one, for example. And we got to talk to other members, and they're all pretty supportive. And also, thanks to the work of volunteers and other organizations coming together that work as activists on D.C. statehood, we were able to give out materials and put literature and materials and buttons on every member's chair at the general session. So when the DNC members came in, every one of them got to see something about statehood. And did we see a lot of buttons or what, Kathleen?
We saw a lot of buttons.
We have the coolest new 51 New Columbia, the 51st state buttons. We've created a new logo. You can go to our website, www.statehoodnow.org, and you can get a button. Just fill out the little form, and we'll make sure you get sent one. It's like the coolest logo on the face of the planet, and they come in blue, and they come in they're both red, white, and blue, but one has a white background, one has a blue background. My favorite is the blue one. I thought it would blow away the white one, but it seems that people like the white one more. So for my opinion. You know, go to the website, www.statehoodnow.org, and you just fill in a little thing where we can send you a button, and we'll send you one. And they're really, really cool. So go ahead and make sure you do that. And thanks to all the people out there that worked so very hard over the week while the Democrats were in town to bring forth our issue and to get support for statehood. We're going to take a little break right now, and I'm going to play an oldie but a goodie. This is a local boy. This is a local boy that went on to greatness. He now plays, his name's Nils Lofgren. He now plays with Bruce Springsteen. But before he did, he grew up here in Bethesda and was a local musician, and we all used to go listen to him. So here's a song from Nils from all the people that worked on the getting the resolutions through. This goes out to you. We'll be back in a minute. Thank you.
Okay, America.
That's it. We all sung together, and we got it done. And my friend from Arizona, who wants to put on Juno and the Boogeyman, whatever that group is that you like,
I'm doing the music in March. I just want to let the audience know, please tune back. It won't be so bad next time. We could have played Kumbaya, you know, and that would have, I think, been just as good. But that's okay. You're an old guy, and I get it. No problem. You got to keep up with the
we
times.
We sang all together, and I like that. Well, I want to move on to what I find to be a very interesting news item, and I'm sure you have a lot of opinions like about this, since it's your old kind of one of the many states that you've been living in lately, running from state to state. But North Dakota. Listen to this. North Dakota was the highest state among all the states in new job creation. Does that surprise you?
Yes. No, because they found that this huge oil in the, like, I don't know, thousands of feet in the shale below. And so they had to bring it up. And, yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. I think they created over probably hundreds of thousands of jobs there. And they also saw their crime rate go way up, too. They can't leave their doors open. I mean, North Dakota, especially Minot, Williston, some of those areas were so, I mean, you know, people, let me tell you, North Dakota is real pretty in the summer. I will give it that. It's beautiful. I was amazed how much of the food we eat is raised there. But in the wintertime, there's not a lot to do. There was not a lot of people there. Now, they had such a rush of men up there. They've just brought all kinds of, you know, like any rush does, a whole bed of problems, you know, carjackings and crime going up. And, you know, it's been pretty bad for them. And their whole town is just being transformed overnight. So that does not surprise me at all. Yeah,
well,
it surprises
something.
Me. What?
Okay, go ahead. No, I was just going to say.
Go ahead.
Here's something that may surprise you. Really, that's not true. The number one jurisdiction in job creation, and there was a little asterisk, is Washington, D.C. But it wasn't included because
it's not a state.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Really, Washington, D.C. is the number one, had the number one in the last year job creation, but we weren't included because we weren't a state.
Well, let me ask you this. Where are all these jobs? Are they federal jobs? Because I'm looking for a job. So there's all these jobs out there. I want to find one of them, which I think probably, you know, we had an argument about this, you know, about just that I don't think they keep these statistics up to date, because I think there's a lot of people our age who've been laid off, their job's been terminated, whatever situation is, and they're in their 50s and, you know, and older and not being employed. So it's interesting how all these jobs are being created, because I know a lot of people unemployed.
Well, first, let me tell you, if you're really looking for a job, a little tip is not to make fun of my music selections, because I won't write you a good recommendation. That's the first thing you should. Maybe that's why you're not getting a job.
Why? Because I stand up for the truth.
Stand
yeah,
up. Good
well.
Yeah, I don't know, and you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. We've certainly seen hard economic times at different times in our lifetimes. But not only is this really widespread, but I've never known this many people in our age group to be unemployed. You know, unemployment was usually something that hit younger people, you know, people getting out of college or you know, people looking for better work that can only find minimum wage jobs. And by the way, the president, in his little speech the other day, mentioned that the minimum wage has to go up. And I think that would be a good thing. We're raising it here in the District of Columbia. It'll be $11.50 by I think it's 2016. So that needs to go up. But I've never in my lifetime seen as many people above the age of 50 who are unemployed. And you and I know a bunch of them.
Yes, too many, in fact. Way too many. And you know, it just. It's like we've said before, you know, I don't really hear anybody but, you know, Senator Warren talking about the, you know, the and Bernie Sanders talking about the disappearing middle class. And I see it every day. You know, yeah. I see that to be the truth. So it's just kind of it's interesting. It's interesting to be here in D.C. and to follow the reasoning. It's very hard when you're in this town where there is all of a sudden so much wealth throughout the city. You know, you can understand they don't see it, the economy being bad, because there is a lot of building here. There's a lot going up, a lot of jobs, I'm sure, that have been created in the trade industry, and all the apartment buildings are going up, and the whole, not just one building, you know, the whole redesign and redevelopment of the wharf and areas of the city that I'm just shocked. I don't recognize anything from them when I was here. You know, it's all changed so drastically.
Yeah, and it is really, really sad that we have this great disparity. You know, it's almost Dickens-esque. And it's, you know, a tale of two cities here in Washington. We are the classic example of it. We have more educated people in the District of Columbia. We have more people that have a graduate degree in the District of Columbia than any other city in the United States. But yet 35% of our population is functionally illiterate. More than a third of the people in District of Columbia can't read the newspaper, but we're among the most educated people in the world. And there was a study that came out last week that shows that people in the District of Columbia are among the poorest people in the country, but we understand that we pay the highest per capita taxes because we make the most money of anybody in the country. So here we are, a city with the richest people in the country and the poorest people in the country. And that's just terrible. It's just terrible that there's this disparity. We see it in education in the district. We see that African-American children that live in the poorer wards of the city, ward 7 and 8, are lagged 20 points in reading and math behind white students in the upper-class neighborhoods. So, it's terrible that there are these disparities in the nation's capital. And I'm sure it's just an indication of disparities like this across the country. You know, and it's funny that you should bring up Elizabeth Warren how she and Bernie Sanders and some other people are talking about the disappearing middle class. What do you think about Elizabeth Warren? You think she's, you know, they're talking in the Democratic Party about her challenging Hillary Clinton. What do you think about that?
I like her a lot. I just don't think she's ready yet. I think maybe in another 4 years, I think she needs a little bit more time. But she's really made an impression on her fight for college students and for, you know, trying to I mean, I think her bill that she introduced last session was perfect, and where give the students the same interest rate you give banks. You know, I mean, come on. This is both of them. You know, one has all our money, but the other one is the future of America. And so I think she's made big headway on that end of it. And I think also her stand for middle class. But I just don't think enough people know enough about her. They've heard about her, but it's not a, you know, she's just hasn't had the years that I think she needs another 4 years to really be able to do it. And I don't want to see her try now and burn, because you know how it is. Once you run, it's, you know, most of the time they don't find you viable again in the next turnaround. So I'd rather wait, see her sit it out, even if we don't have much of a choice as far as our Democratic nominee. I have a real problem with Hillary Clinton. I have a lot of friends that work for the foundation. I think they're my friends. I'm not sure. But I know a lot of people, and I just, you know, I hate to say it, but again, I will, as I've said many times, I just know so many men that just get violently angry when you mention her name, and I think there's some women that just don't like her also. It's going to be a hard sell for her to win, and yet I still don't see anyone coming out of the Democratic Party that really excites anybody. Nor do I really with Republicans either, but, you know, it's strange. It's going to be a strange 2 years to see who surfaces.
Well, first of all, let me also comment on your comment about loaning money to college students. Let me also point out that college students have never cheated America and made the economy collapse like bankers have. So
that's
yeah,
true.
I think if you're going to give somebody preferred treatment on interest rates, that college students ought to at least get treated as well as the people that drove our economy into the dumper. But also, I would say that everything you're saying about Elizabeth Warren, and I think that's true, you make a good point, but you could have said the same things about Barack Obama. You know, people didn't know him. He was a first-time senator. He didn't have the experience. But I think what this guy Axelrod, who was his campaign manager, sensed was the same thing that you're talking about, that there are a lot of people that didn't like Hillary. And I think he saw in the primaries that Hillary was going to take it. You know, we all thought that she was going to be the nominee last time.
All but me.
Excuse me. Yeah. And
all but me. And I was out there on my own.
And he saw you and Neil Axelrod, who saw that people were voting for her because it wasn't an alternative. So he provided a alternative and made that alternative viable, and lo and behold, he won the Obama won the primaries and went on to victory. So I don't know. Maybe they can make Elizabeth the Hillary alternative, and certainly it would solve, I guess, a problem for women who want to see a woman in the White House, you know, who don't like Hillary. Here's another liberal woman that you certainly could vote for. You know, I love Hillary Clinton. She stood up for statehood on many occasions and stood up for the District of Columbia when she was in the United States Senate. And, you know, I'm a big Hillary supporter. But I feel the same thing that you're saying. I mean, I see it. I have friends, both male and female, that are opposed to her, and so we'll see what happens. But you know, Elizabeth Warren's people are pushing hard.
She's doing pretty well. I mean, and she's coming up, and the numbers are surprising. I think you know, like the 13%, but that's very good for someone who's pretty much an unknown. In a lot of ways, you know. So it's going to be very interesting to see, because as you know how it goes, you never know what it's going to go like until like the fat woman sings or the opera woman sings or whatever. At the end, you know, when she finally ends the show, you figure it out. But there can be so many changes from now until then. It will be very interesting to see who comes out.
Well, I've got an idea. Why don't we invite them both to come on Shadow Politics? And debate.
Yes, let's do that. And debate, yeah. Right?
And debate.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting because, you know, a lot of it's going to be crucial on if we win the Congress or who wins the party. You know, I mean, I'm a Democrat, but I have a lot of issues with the Democratic Party. I am an independent at this point in time, and I really am looking for some kind of fresh new leader. You know, I think that's what a lot of the people in the United States, they want somebody fresh and new and somebody who's going to promise them that they can somehow get get both sides talking again. And I don't know. I sure wish there was an independent party. I know that there can't be because of this and that, because of Electoral College. But you know what? I just wish somebody would come out and lead the independent party, because I think there's a, you know, Arizona, it's always amazing to me, that is the largest party in Arizona is the independent party.
Well, first of all, how can you be a Democrat and an independent? Please explain that to me.
Okay. I have some real issues with the corruption on local levels of the Democratic Party. Seems to always look the other way, because it always comes down to, and I'm sure the Republicans are the same way too, it's about, doesn't matter how you get it as long as you get the votes, right? And I think a lot of corruption, you and I have had a lot of disagreements about voter registration, absentee ballots, and voter fraud, and I feel that people should go in and prove that they are citizens of this country and are citizens to vote. I don't understand why everyone says, oh, we should let everyone vote who's here. I mean, everyone that's not a citizen necessarily have our best interests at heart. And I just think somebody who's a citizen, I mean, I personally feel that the best patriots are the people that come and apply to become a citizen and finally take that oath. Those are the most patriotic people I know. And I think a lot of the youth of this country just don't understand what they have to lose. So, you know, that's why I think I'm an independent, because if I say those things to the Democratic Party, I get looked at as like, you know, they want to just, you know, burn me at the stake. And I think they have to listen to some of what people are saying. And it's always a good time to reflect and see what you're doing wrong within your own party and somehow try to do a cleansing and get yourself back on the road.
Well, you know, although I do not agree with you on the voter ID thing, I think that the voter ID thing only hurts the Democrats, and that's why the Republicans want it. And I don't agree. You know, there's no, in my opinion, what I've read, there's no widespread voter fraud that anybody's ever proved.
I wanted to take you to freaking, I got to take you and show you how it happens all the time at local levels. I'd love people out there in the United States, please call this number and educate my friend here that voter fraud happens and happens rampantly everywhere throughout the United States, and we have to get that under control. I'm sorry, we do, and I don't know what you live. This is when I feel so different than the Liberal Democratic Party, because I don't understand what's wrong with proving. I mean, my son can get an ID for $1.25. So don't tell me that, you know, if you're poor and you don't even have $1.25, I'm sure we could fund it for you. I mean, the Democrats are good at least that. There's no reason why you can't show that you are a citizen of this country. I don't understand why we want people from Nicaragua. I'm a Hispanic. But they want, their agenda is their home. It's not the United States. I think the people that want the best have to be citizens of the United States to vote.
So, well, you know, that's fine. That's a fine sentiment, but the reality of it is that people in North Carolina, people in Texas and South Carolina and Alabama and all sorts of places to the South have put things in place to keep people from legitimately voting. And if they have to have an ID, you can make damn sure that they will come up with ways to make it be a specific ID that not everybody will be able to get, and that is the problem. Look, you know, they just
want
removed
free pass for everybody. Anybody who gets here, you don't even have to be a citizen. Just go ahead and vote. I mean, you can't have a free pass. No other. I don't think there's any other democratic country in the world that does it this way. That just lets anybody vote. I know that for a fact. I'm researching.
Well, we don't just let anybody vote.
Countries that I've been in. Exactly.
All right.
In the way you talk, I mean, anybody can. We'll have to do this. There'll have to be another discussion for another time, another show.
I know, because the show is coming to an end, but please, those of you good liberals that are out there, please call in next week so that we can get Kathleen back in the, you know, we need to do a group intervention on Kathleen and get her back into the Liberal Democratic Party. But I'm going to give her the last word, because this week she was the shining star. She got done what we weren't able to get done for a very long time. So the last word is yours, Kathleen.
Well, thank you very much for that acknowledgement, because I do appreciate that. And I only did it because it was just something that was, as an outsider, you know, I just saw this and I'm glad that you know, the voters were represented in your resolution, because I think it's important. But March, we're going to have some great guests. We're going to get back to some, of course, statehood is always the thing we talk about on the show. But we want to delve into the ERA and some of the big issues, immigration, all kinds of things that are going to be coming up. So please stay tuned. Check in with us next weekend. And remember, I'll be doing the songs in March. Give the people their right to vote.